What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Everyone, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Sheryl Selman, and it is wonderful to be here with you again. So glad you're listening in. I just returned from a wonderful visit. Thank you to all the people who came to my class in New York City at the Natch Institute, and also to the wonderful people I met up in the Boston area. So that's been a fun time. I'm back here. Ready to go. There's an amazing year that is emerging. I'll be filling you in on all the great projects that I will be involved in. One of the things I do want to remind everyone, I just put together a very special six-week series that's an expose on the Gardasil vaccine, which, you know, that's the vaccine that's supposedly the cervical cancer vaccine that's being promoted on television, and by all the doctors and everyone else telling everyone that this is the most phenomenal vaccine, and every 10 and 11-year-old little boy and little girl should be receiving this vaccine. Well, hold on. Before you go there, or before your grandkids go there, or friends of, you know, your family, whoever might be out there who is considering this vaccine, please, please, please listen to my six-part series on the Gardasil issue. The way you can listen to this free six-week series is to either go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, and opt in there. And once you opt in, I will be sending these a series of interviews, hour-long interviews, with leading authors, researchers, medical doctors, and parents of injured children to you. So that's one way to get not just that six-week series, but all the information that I continually send out to my list, special reports, and a variety of really important educational materials. Or you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, and you'll be able to access the series, the Gardasil series. But in addition to that, on my Facebook page, on a daily basis, I post all sorts of tips, recipes, articles, research, interviews of particular interest to women, women's health issues. So it's a great way to get empowered with truthful information so you can make informed decisions, which is really my theme song here. Get empowered with truthful information so you can make informed decisions. Only you know what is best for you, but you must have all the facts in order to be able to make the best decision possible. So hopefully you'll be taking advantage of the ongoing series of many important topics, particularly affecting women, women's health. But in the case of Gardasil, we're talking about the health of our children. So please listen in and spread the word. Our topic today is going to explore how we can fight cancer with vitamins and antioxidants. In fact, we're looking at the book, the author of the book, Fighting Cancer with Vitamins and Antioxidants by Dr. Kedar Prasad. And his co-author, which is Chay Prasad, his son. This is the fourth edition. This book has been around for a while, and it is such an important book. This is the kind of information we need to know. You know, the issue and the incidence of cancer is, of course, only growing. It's a very scary thing to get a diagnosis. In fact, just the diagnosis can reduce your risk of survival because it is so terrifying in our minds. And in fact, there are many, many safe, effective, natural approaches that we can do, either incorporating it with a traditional therapy, or if people choose to do a more integrative approach using a variety of natural safe approaches, that's an option. We need to know there are lots and lots of options. So I was really interested in asking Dr. Prasad to be on the program today because he has such phenomenal information. And let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Prasad. He's a PhD and is the Chief Scientific Officer of the Premier Micronutrient Corporation. He is the former director of the Center for Vitamins and Cancer Research at the University of Colorado School of Medicine and the former president of the International Society of Nutrition and Cancer. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Prasad to the show. So hello, Dr. Prasad.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me and my listeners today because this really is such an important subject. We have so much misinformation, particularly around the use of vitamins and antioxidants in general, but even more so when we look at how to use vitamins and antioxidants to help us dealing with cancer. You know, it's so confusing, isn't it? It's a bit of a minefield to those who are uninformed.
Right, correct.
So, by the way, congratulations on your revised and expanded fourth edition. Good for you. It's the kind of information that needs to get out there more and more. So let me just begin by asking you, what was it that inspired you to put all this information, all this fantastic information, a lot of research here, into this book, and to create this book, actually?
Yeah, I mean, the reason I revised this book because there are two information that have come out recently which was not covered, and still there is a confusion on that issue. The first is you have a lot of diagnostic radiation going on, like CT scan, mammogram, and so on, and the risk of cancer they have predicted will increase by virtue of excessive use of these kind of diagnostic procedure. And the question is that what one can do to reduce the risk, whatever little risk is there. And people have estimated that if you get a one CT scan, the risk of cancer increases one cases per 1,000 people exposed. That's a lot.
Wait, and so go over that. So for one CT scan, what's that statistic again?
One CT scan can increase the risk of cancer, one cases per 1,000 people who have received a CT scan.
In other
words, people who receive the scan, one will develop, increase the risk of cancer. And so, and there are about 60 million CT scans are done every year in this country.
Why does CT scan increase the risk of cancer?
Because it is based on X-ray radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And X-ray is well-known cancer-causing agents.
Right. And that's the same problem with the mammogram as well.
Yeah, same issue with mammogram as well. And that's why the United States Task Force has recommended that the woman after 50 should have every alternate year mammogram. But that has been questioned or that has been fighting by the radiology who does a lot of mammogram. And so that has become a controversial issue, and I have discussed that issue in my book, what to do and how to resolve this controversy. So that was one issue that led me to do that. And second issue was that another example give you that there is a confusion. People are using a tamoxifen, which is very good agent, low-dose tamoxifen, for reduce the risk of cancer. But one of the side effects, tamoxifen, is hyperlipidemia. In other words, your lipid profile goes very up and can increase the risk of a stroke and cardiac disease in a small number of patients. But there was a clinical study made that if you put the patient who are on tamoxifen with antioxidant, then it will reduce the risk of developing hyperlipidemia or bad lipid profiles, like cholesterol, high level of cholesterol, and so on, and reduces the risk of a stroke that might happen in some people who are taking the tamoxifen. So
Dr. Prasad, can I just jump in here? Because since you've mentioned tamoxifen, which I actually have researched and written about, I have to say that there's some scary things about tamoxifen, and it's, of course, not recommended beyond 5 years of use because of the increased risk of tamoxifen creating another breast cancer occurrence in women.
Because they're all, potentially, they're all carcinogenic. That's why they gave low dose. But point is that if there is any value, say, for example, you know, and if doctor recommends it for reasons, and if you take an antioxidant with that, that next potential risk is reduced.
What kind of antioxidant?
Well, you know, in this case, when I'm talking about the multiple vitamins, which has a whole profile of dietary antioxidants like vitamin A, C, you know, a standard vitamin, and as well as the dietary, as well as the endogenous antioxidant like alpha-lipoic acid, coenzyme Q10, N-acetylcysteine, you know, and L-carnitine, and plus all these B vitamin, you know, a standardized vitamin formulation, which will be very useful if you are going to take it, tamoxifen, for example. So one can take the advantage of both their anti-estrogenic effect as well as the reduces the side effects of tamoxifen. That would be my suggestion. But maybe you have done more research than
me. I don't think I've done more than you, Dr. Prasad. And that's what I want to take full advantage of your presence on the show today, because you have some really important information that I want to go over. And I think we should start with some of the information you have in your book that includes some of the common misconceptions about cancer. And then we can give some real facts. I think that's always good to kind of dispel a lot of the myths or misperceptions and then help people to get on the right track. So why don't we start with some of the common misperceptions about cancer?
Yeah, well, common misperceptions on cancer is, you know, that we can't, for example, prevent cancer. I mean, you know, you mean cancer causes or the presence of cancer? As far as the cancer causes is concerned, you know, there are many causes of cancer, and in the environment, in the diet. But the perception of cancer is that we can't do anything about it. Or people who have a genetic basis for cancer, they feel that, well, I can't do anything until the cancer appears. I think both perception is wrong. I think no matter who, you know, by virtue of age, people are at high risk of cancer. As you said in your remark, cancer is increasing. So what we can do to reduce the risk of cancer on any individual is that we take, everybody recommends a good diet, low-fat, high-fiber diet, change in lifestyle, smoking, give up smoking, do meditation and things like that. But I also, equally important, is take an appropriate type of multiple vitamin that could be added benefit to whatever. You know, it is difficult to change human behavior. So in spite of the fact that we say change the diet, change the lifestyle, people don't change it for some reasons.
Yeah.
Because human behavior, as you know, is difficult to change. And therefore, we strongly recommend that try to do as best as you can in the modification in your diet and lifestyle, but take a multiple vitamin preparation which has been prepared in the right way. And so that's another thing. Second thing is that we feel that if you have genetic basis of cancer, we can't do anything to prevent or delay that cancer. Recently, we have done some experiment in collaboration with a colleague at the NASA, California, and we found that in a fruit fly, which had this woman who was the scientist there, Dr. Bhattacharya, she put a gene in a fruit fly, in a female fruit fly, and found that the genetic risk of cancer increased. Then they gave radiation. Radiation further increased the risk of cancer, which has now genetic basis. Because we know we put the gene for that cancer, and now it is producing cancer. But when they put on a vitamin that we gave a formulation of micronutrient, including antioxidant, and they put in the diet of the fruit fly before and after radiation, the cancer was totally prevented. So yeah. We can't extrapolate from the fruit fly to human, but at least this gives a demonstration that even the genetic basis of cancer can be reduced by micronutrient supplement. That was a very exciting pilot experiment we have done. We have not published that yet, but that's very exciting.
Isn't that exciting? I mean, it's empowering because people can realize that they can do things, that they can get, they can make choices, they can incorporate into their diet easily the kinds of nutrition that will be in their favor, support the body. You know, I'm going to ask you this question, which is probably obvious to everyone, but I think it still needs to be asked. Why isn't this information used in more traditional mainstream approaches, literature, you know, teaching schools? Why aren't doctors taught about this? It should not be a threat to that system, but it's if anything, it's bashed all the time. It's invalidated.
I think it's a complimentary. I was teaching a course when I was at the University of Colorado Medical School to a student, medical student, a course on nutrition and cancer, and they were very, very much interested in it. And I think Congress has required, but people have ignored it, Congress has required that all medical schools should have a course on integrative medicine, including nutrition, cancer, you know.
Congress?
But,
really?
Yes. But in on a surface, every medical school have now some kind of integrative medicine attached to the cancer. But really, they provide kind of lip service. Mm-hmm. There is no active research going on. Patient given a choice of, you know, you go and consult your nutritionist. Those nutritionists are dietitian type of nutrition, just focus on diet. They don't recommend vitamin supplement for some reasons. And the one major reason why this field is not growing or has created a controversy is that all the clinical study which has been done on cancer prevention has been done by a single antioxidant. Like, you know, you are aware of the beta-carotene trial, mm-hmm. as well as vitamin E trial in heart mm-hmm. disease, mm-hmm. but beta-carotene trial in the smokers. And of course, it increased the risk of cancer in lung cancer. But if you look at the biology of antioxidant, if you give one antioxidant to any individual like a smoker, when the antioxidant goes into the body, they become like a free radical. They act as a pro-oxidant rather than antioxidant. And therefore, they don't realize this issue. This is well-known phenomena. This is not my discovery. This is well-known in the nutrition field. That individual antioxidant, when they become oxidized, they act as a pro-oxidant. And as smokers have a very high environment, oxidative environment in the body. And therefore, you'd have predicted that this will happen, that it will increase the risk of lung cancer. And this is exactly what happens. So why you wasted that much money to run experimental trial, clinical trial, that you knew? Probably they didn't know that. And so these kind of issue have created a problem that they are using vitamin like a drug. So they use in a clinical study one at a time.
Right.
But the body has a multiple vitamin. How can you expect that one antioxidant will do anything?
Right.
And so that is another problem with the why this field is being, I don't know, some people claim, I don't have my own opinion, that establishment is against using vitamin because they don't provide any money, and, you know, like drug does. And but I'm trying to push this field as much as I can, and I have done all this kind of stuff, as you know. Mm-hmm. But the point is that and since I have joined a private company, it has become kind of problematic for me because now everybody thinks that I'm selling a product, which is not true. And so the question is that, you know, how to resolve this kind of controversy? And my suggestion is that if you make a clinical study, you make with a multiple vitamin. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So
So, you know, as we're continuing the conversation, dispelling the myths and the truths, what are some of the important facts about cancer in general that we need to know?
Well, the cancer, well, you know, cancer in general is that the, you know, I mean, in terms of prevention or the biology of the cancer. Here is the biology of the cancer.
Yeah.
Once you get exposed to any kind of a cancer-causing agent, whether it is radiation, whether it's environment pollution, chemical carcinogen, you don't develop cancer right away. What it does, it makes some kind of genetic damage. Now, the cell still continues to divide and proliferate as it has nothing happened. Several years after, some additional mutation or genetic changes in a specific gene occurs, now the cell normally will divide and differentiate and die in our body. The turnover of the cell all the time occurring, divide, differentiate, and die. But when the mutation or genetic changes occur in a specific gene, then now the cell cannot go to differentiate, therefore it cannot go to die, that it doesn't die. So they start proliferating, continue to proliferate, and becomes precancerous changes, like you see in a cyst in the breast or a polyp in the colon. They are an example of precancerous changes. But then precancer changes remain for a long time. And then a specific gene occurs, a kind of genetic damage in an oncogene or anti-oncogene, then becomes cancerous. So there is a long latent period. For leukemia, it is considered 10 years after you are exposed to cancer-causing agent. For solid tumor, it is considered over 30 years. So this gives you time to intervene. No matter when you have been exposed to this kind of cancer-causing agent, it gives you a time interval, then you can interrupt any time you give a protective agent that will reduce further genetic damage and therefore further reduce the cancer risk. Because it is happening all the time in our body.
Right. And in our society, we all are exposed to numerous cancer-causing agents. What we all are, so in a sense, we're all at risk. However, again, the empowering message about this is that with proper nutritional support, we are assisting our body in being able to detoxify these chemicals safely out so they don't get absorbed. You know, you may find this of interest. My dad was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer about 5 years ago, and his integrative doctor did a test to look at the various organs and the accumulation of toxins, chemicals, heavy metals, and the only organ that had that showed an exorbitant amount of toxicity and chemicals was the pancreas.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was able to see that. And one other thing I want to say, I've been working with nutritional genomic testing now and looking at issues such as detoxification, inflammation, oxidative stress, and a variety of things. And I think that's one of the most profound tests that I've come across, because with that test, we can actually look at from what we've inherited from our parents are inefficiencies at detoxifying. There are a lot of people who don't even have glutathione genes. In fact, 50% of Caucasians have deleted glutathione genes, which is one of the most powerful molecules our body makes to detoxify these chemicals. So that gives us some information.
Exactly. And there is a very good point you made, sometimes people buy glutathione in the health food store. But glutathione, if you take a glutathione oral supplement, it gets totally destroyed in the intestinal tract.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we recommend that don't take glutathione orally. You take a endogenous, like we said, alpha-lipoic acid will increase the glutathione level in your body, and acetylcysteine will increase the glutathione level in your body, and they are not hydrolyzed. They are not destroyed in the gut. So, but many people take, they don't know. It is a simple thing, is very well researched and well known, that if you take a glutathione orally, it will be completely destroyed in the gut, and your body will never see, your blood will never see glutathione.
Right, and you won't get the benefit. And that really disturbs me that there are products out there as being sold as glutathione supplementation when it is well known that, you know, most of those supplements will never be available to increase intracellular glutathione. And I, so kind of, you know, I'm kind of perplexed why people are still out there selling it. But there are products that are precursors, or the ingredients that are precursors, that can definitely build your glutathione levels.
And so that's why the N-acetylcysteine does. N-acetylcysteine.
N-acetylcysteine, right.
The bloodstream, it doesn't get destroyed in the gut. Mm-hmm. And when you go to the bloodstream, N-acetyl component is chopped off, and cysteine is used as a precursor to make glutathione.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's another thing that there is a controversy, and people, many people are becoming known, I have been telling for the last 15, 20 years, is that the supplement always have a, most of the time now, some people have removed it, always have a supplement like iron, copper, manganese. These are trace minerals. Deficiency will kill you, but also slight excess of free iron can increase the risk of almost all human chronic diseases, including cancer, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, you name the disease. And the reason is that when iron combined with vitamin C, it generates excessive amounts of free radicals. You know, that is a well-known phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying people should not be taking iron in their supplements, in their, like, in their multivitamins?
That's correct. That's very correct. And the reason is because if you take every day, if you take a week or 2 weeks, doesn't make difference. But if you're going to take iron, the multiple vitamin with iron in your body, then we recommend that you don't take the supplement, because in the presence of antioxidant, iron will be absorbing better than in the absence of it. And increased iron store in the body can increase the risk of all kind of chronic diseases. There is a lot, if you go to literature, there is a lot of paper on this issue. And so we say, you know, because the nature has provided no mechanisms of excretion of iron, copper, or manganese. It stays in your body. And then in a body, you have a protein that binds with the iron, and bound form of iron is harmless. But then it gets saturated because you are taking every day and there is no way it can get out. It will increase the iron dose in 10, 15 years later, you have a problem.
That's so interesting. So you want to take it in the form of your food. You want to be eating...
Because iron, you know, even if you go, if you take it, any kind of even a junk food, that gives you enough iron to last for a month.
Right. Unless you're anemic, is that
the... Different story. If you are anemic, then you have to take vitamin E, vitamin C, and iron combined together so that it can absorb better. Mm-hmm. Once anemia is corrected, then you go back to your normal.
Or, you know, I mean, I put people on blood-building herbs and the foods that build blood rather than putting an iron supplement in.
Supplement is bad. Even, you know, that's why we don't recommend an iron supplement among men of all ages and women after menopause, because it can increase the risk of these kind of issues.
So that's a really important point, and people should look at their multivitamins, and I will look at mine to see if there's iron in there, because if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is we should not be taking a multivitamin that has iron in it as an ingredient for the long term.
That's correct. That's correct. And also, you will see, you will go and look your vitamin, or suggest to your audience that they should also avoid taking multiple vitamin which has a heavy metal. Heavy metal, I mean like vanadium, zirconium, molybdenum.
Mm-hmm.
And again, nature has no way of excreting these heavy metals. So a small amount is okay. It is harmless. Not harmless, but it didn't do any bad thing for you. But if you accumulate excess amount, because it cannot get out of the body, and if you are taking every day, then it can cause damage to your brain cell, nervous tissue in our body is very sensitive to these kind of heavy metals.
Those are commonly put into...
I know. I don't know why they do it. I have no idea. Because, see, if you take any kind of salad, anything which grows in the ground, all this kind of heavy metal, you can't avoid it. They are there. And once you get in your body, they can't get out. Wow. And so why you will take any, if there is no advantage, why you will take three multiple vitamins? I have no idea. And I'm pushing this idea for a long time. And some product now, they will eliminate iron, but still they will keep copper in there. But so you go and look your own formulation and advise your audience to look their formulation and make sure they, in my opinion, they don't have iron, copper, manganese, or heavy metals.
That's so interesting. We're about to take a break, Dr. Prasad, but I just want to say I have not heard anybody mention this before.
I don't know why, because this is so well-known phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, this is such important information that you're sharing. Well, we need to take a break, so Dr. Prasad, please stay on the line, and to all my listeners, don't go away. This is truly life-saving and life-changing information. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we'll be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And today we are having a really fascinating conversation with Dr. Kedar Pradosh, who is the author, co-author, I should say, with his son, Fighting Cancer with Vitamins and Antioxidants, which is the revised and expanded fourth edition. So this book is around and has been around, just keeps getting bigger and bigger, because it has such vitally important information for all of us. So, Dr. Prasad, so we're talking about some really interesting things that we need to know, such as those heavy metals and some of the nutrients that are found in our, you know, even expensive multivitamin formulations that really are not good for us to be taking, which has really been new information to me. What is there anything else we need to know about some of these important nutritional facts?
Yeah, another thing you will see that sometimes they have tendency to put everything that they hear about it in their formulation. Mm-hmm. For example, I will give you another example. The lutein is very important for eye. And the, you know, lutein antioxidant.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it is important for the eye, among other antioxidants too, but lutein specifically, not just lutein alone, but you have to have lutein in combination with other antioxidants. But lutein accumulates in the eye more than in any other organ. But the effective dose that has been shown to be of value in preventing eye defects, you know, but they are in a milligram concentration. In other words, if you take a lutein, you have to take in a milligram, not in a microgram. But then what they do it, they will add some a small amount, like in a 50 or 100 microgram of lutein, so that the formulation looks like it has everything. But it is not effective dose, so it is waste of your resources, money. It is not going to do anything to your eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so adding something in a smaller amount that is not going to do it is not harmful, but it's not doing any good either. Another example would be...
How much should it be?
It should be in a milligram, like at 5-6 milligram.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody has an eye defect, you know, then one should have a multiple vitamin preparation in which at least you have a 5-6 milligram of lutein,
mm-hmm.
but in 100 microgram.
Mm-hmm.
And lutein is very costly, so until somebody has really eye, you know, like older people have a macular degeneration type of precursor or some high risk to develop macular degeneration, they should have this in addition to a multiple vitamin. Then they have to add a separate one because this is costly.
Right.
So you cannot put everything in one, otherwise it becomes so cost effective. Like younger people, for example, people who are in the 30s or 40s don't need a lutein. And so these kind of issues, sometimes they use lutein, lycopene for the same reason. Lycopene accumulates in the prostate tissue more than in any other place. But again, one should take in a milligram, not in a microgram. But you will see in some formulation, they will add a few hundred microgram or 100 microgram or 50 microgram of lycopene, and they will say it is prostate health. Well, so this kind of misinformation, I think public should know about it, and that's important that you are trying to educate these people to take a right kind of supplement which has these kind of issues.
And, you know, that's so important, because just because it's listed on the label, it doesn't mean it's really doing what it could potentially do.
Exactly. And for example, another good example would be that some formulation will have a choline about choline, which mm-hmm. is a precursor of neurotransmitter in your body, acetylcholine, and a 300 milligram, and methionine will be 300 milligram. And these are all amino acids, but the thing is that the but in the diet every day you take 800 milligram.
Mm-hmm.
So why, what is the purpose of taking 300 milligram when you are taking it, which is more than enough, 800 mm-hmm. milligram from your diet?
Mm-hmm.
But again, the formulator in some formulation, they add these things because they read someplace that choline is very good for your brain. And, you know, so they just add it without thinking about how much I should do, which might be effective.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying it's not necessary or not enough?
It is not enough. It is necessary not in the formulation, because you get plenty from the diet.
You do.
So there's no taking from the supplement agent like choline.
Mm-hmm.
But it is at least not harmful. It is not going to harm you.
Right, right.
But I'm just telling you that it has no effect.
It may not be necessary.
Yes, right, exactly.
Right. So you have a chapter, your third chapter in your book is called Free Radicals, Inflammation, the Immune System, and Antioxidants. And it's a really important chapter. Can you help us understand the role of free radicals and inflammation and how it is a risk factor for cancer and some of the things that we should know about or should be taking to reduce that risk?
Exactly. It is very interesting that you raise this issue, because free radicals can be generated by a whole bunch of, in other words, most cancer-causing agents, most, whether it is radiation or chemicals or biological, they mediate their action by generating excessive amount of free radicals. This is well known. Nobody can argue that.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, how do you reduce it? Obviously, antioxidant is very safe way of reducing the free radicals. And once your tissue gets damaged a little bit, initiate inflammation. That inflammation are two kind. One is a good inflammation, which is a anti-inflammatory agents. One is they are released simultaneously, and then anti and pro-inflammatory agents are released simultaneously. And then what happens on a long-term basis, pro-inflammatory cytokines, we call them, takes over. And so there is no more the antioxidant, which is useful, the inflammation product, which are helpful, is being released. And so these two factors, excessive amounts of free radicals and pro-inflammatory cytokines, are one of the major mechanisms of causing cancer, not only causing cancer, but they are also involved in many other diseases. You take a heart disease, one side, Alzheimer, target is different, another side. In other words, these two agents are the earliest events. And if you can downregulate it, if you can reduce them by antioxidant, the risk of not only cancer, but varieties of chronic illness can be markedly reduced. Because these two, free radicals and inflammation, are so important, not only in the initiation of cancer, but also in the progression of the cancer. And at this moment, people are developing genetic basis to develop the genetic basis of drug. For example, if somebody prevents the death of the cancer cell, that gene they develop a cancer on. But the question is, what causes the death of the cancer cell? This is very important. And any agent which can prevent the death of the cancer cell, that can be very useful. Again, antioxidant at very high dose, but not toxic dose, at a very high dose can inhibit the growth of the cancer without inhibiting the growth of the normal cell. Mm-hmm. But if you give a low dose of antioxidant, it can stimulate the treatment and prevention is different issue. In the prevention of cancer, you have to have a lower dose of antioxidant. In the treatment of cancer, you have to have a much higher dose for a short period of time so that they can kill the cancer cells without killing the normal cell. And then you come with a standard therapy, radiation or chemotherapy, and continue this procedure. Then you can enhance the effect of radiation and chemotherapy on cancer cell while protecting the normal cell. This is very important. But if you use a low dose of antioxidant in combination with radiation, that dose of antioxidant will protect both cancer cell and normal cell. So that will be a counterproductive. The oncologists have failed to distinguish between preventive doses of antioxidant and therapeutic doses of antioxidant. This has created a lot of confusion.
Well, that's a lot. So let's just go over that, because that's a really important statement. So if you are being if you're being treated for cancer, so you've been diagnosed, and you take low amounts of antioxidants, they actually can protect the healthy and the cancer cells.
That's correct.
So you must, which of course you don't want to do, because that's going to create an environment that supports the growth of the cancer cells.
Right, exactly.
So you need to, so if you are being treated, or I guess even diagnosed, and you know there is an issue with cancer, you must take high, and we're going to talk about which ones, high levels of antioxidants, because they will support the healthy cells only. Is that correct?
That's right, and we might kill the cancer. At least in experimental system, we have shown that this is the case. Even in human, for example, pre-neoplastic disease like oral, they have shown that this regresses the oral leukoplakia, and so. But people have not done a high doses of antioxidant in combination with their standard therapy, and this is extremely important.
Can Dr. Pradesh, can you give can you give us an example of what would be a couple of those antioxidant nutrients that should be taken in high doses?
In my book, I have given detail, but I give you a couple of examples. But I have given the formulation what they should do, what they should take for a prevention as well as treatment, and there are doses written there in the book that you are mentioning it. But I give you example the differences. For example, for preventive doses for vitamin E in a multiple preparation of vitamin E, we give a total of 400 international unit. It depends upon the age. Sometimes for younger people, maybe only 200, but for adult, we give 400. For therapeutic doses, it would be 1600. For example, beta-carotene, vitamin C, take an example. For preventive doses of vitamin would be around 1 gram or 1.5, depending upon the age, 1.5 gram or 1,500 milligram. But therapeutic doses will be 8 to 10 grams of vitamin C, not just one. And it has to be a combination of multiple vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are the example of therapeutic versus preventive doses.
Right.
And this distinction, oncologists have failed to realize that, and therefore they use the data which has been used on a low, even experimental data, which has been used by a low dose of antioxidant, and therefore they have protected both cells. And so we said, no, when you are taking any standard therapy, don't take a low dose antioxidant. Many times oncology will say, go and buy GNC or some other company's multiple vitamin. But that could be wrong. And another issue is that what you do after therapy, because after therapy, those who have been successfully treated, they develop what is called, among the layman's terms, chemo brain. Have you heard this terminology, chemo brain? I was told by oncologists. In other words, they develop a dementia, transient dementia.
Right.
Forget. And they become more susceptible to infection because of the suppression of the immune system. And later on, as you know, that they have a high risk of developing a cancer as well as non-cancerous diseases. And they have right now no program to intervene after radiation to reduce the risk of these kind of cancerous, non-cancerous diseases among survivors of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And in my book, we have recommended that, again, you combine diet, lifestyle, and appropriate type of supplement after therapy. Because right now, oncology is totally against antioxidant. So you are not going to convince them that they will recommend it to you. But after radiation, there is no controversy. After radiation, people have, oncologists will say, yeah, do whatever you want to do it. I have done my job. And so there in my book, I have recommended how to modify your diet, lifestyle, and take appropriately type of multiple antioxidant to prevent the potential risk of not only reoccurrence of the tumor, which occurs in some cases, but also developing a new cancer, which has been induced by treatment modality, and like radiation and chemotherapy, as well as the non-cancerous diseases. There are several types of non-cancerous diseases that can occur.
You know, that's a really important point as well that I hope everyone is paying attention to, because, you know, you go through the treatment, and often it's a trauma of treatment with radiation and chemotherapy, and you think you've made it through, then you're facing the consequences and the damage caused by the treatment itself, the radiation and or chemotherapy.
Exactly. And again, there, excessive amount of free radicals, not as much as during therapy, but after that, more than the normal people are produced, and inflammation is produced, and therefore, again, free radical inflammation plays a central role in either in the reoccurrence of the tumor or in the development of new cancer, and we have to reduce them, then you reduce the risk of those kind of diseases.
And again, once someone has completed their course of treatment, they're just kind of sent out the door and said, you're fine, and nothing is done to support them.
There's no intervention study. That's amazing. And here is a rational intervention study that we are trying to promote that, and then this will be very good, because science is there to back it up. If there is no science behind it, I understand it. But there is science behind it, and still, you know, the establishment or people are reluctant to remove it, even though doctor may think, but if they recommend vitamin, then they are not anymore any good doctor. So I think they have to preserve their prestige, I guess. But I think in this case, like you have been talking during your show, you have to empower the patient themselves, and they should be more vigilant what to do, what not to do about your health.
Right. You know, can you mention something about cell phones? I actually have been writing and lecturing about the dangers of cell phones and wireless technology for several years now, and there are more and more studies that actually are coming out warning about these risks. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, you know, you have been doing it, I reviewed the literature on this, published work on this one, and excessive use, they claim excessive use, means, you know, a few hours a day, and for 5 years or 10 years or more, they have found increased risk of brain tumor. And some of them are benign type, but, you know, benign type brain tumor is as bad as the aggressive type.
Mm-hmm.
And so my position is that I think what I have recommended in this book was that the excessive use of cell phones should be avoided. And when you can, you know, sometime in the car you have all these things are in a program. You know, these days in a new car you have programmed it in a way that you don't have to put near your ear.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can do that, those are the preventive measure. And of course, you know, if you are taking a multiple antioxidant, you can reduce some of the risk, because they also generate, again, free radicals.
Right.
So my position right now is after doing that, the avoid excessive use of cell phone, and especially even young children, younger people, you know, not younger people, but everybody, but especially younger people, because they talk all the times.
Mm.
And I'm sure as a profession, you and I also use a lot of cell phone. And so, but you know, again, you know, sometimes you have to balance out benefit versus risk. If for my job I have to do a few things, then I take extra precautions and take a good diet and multiple vitamins. And so that has been my position in terms of it is a risk factor, it is going to be a risk factor. And right now there is a controversy. Some people say yes, some people say no. But it reminded me like, you know, early 60s in a tobacco industry had a claim that nicotine is not addiction and it is not, and tobacco is not carcinogenic. So controversy existed for a while, and then finally, you know, they said, no, I think tobacco is a carcinogenic agent and nicotine is an addictive agent. Finally, they accepted that. So this kind of historically in science goes on for a while, but science is behind it, and I think you will see that excessive use of a cell phone could increase the risk of brain tumor, especially among the younger people.
Right. I think so, too. And like you said, it's causing immune problems and inflammation and free radical damage. So it brings us back full circle to what your work is about, which is looking at the right vitamins, antioxidants,
exactly.
And other ingredients that we need. Can you just give us some general guidelines? What if we're just talking about a basic program, not dealing with specific illnesses or cancer, but if people just want to do a fundamental program, what should they know?
Well, first, what should you know? I think the best thing would be the website. You know, what would be, you know, I will tell you, but the best thing would be the website I wrote to you. I don't know whether you got it or not. If you go to our website, www.mypmcinside.com, that can give you a lot of information what I have been talking on this issue. And so, for example, it is dependent upon the age and gender. One multiple vitamin cannot fit for all age groups, because as we grow older, the capacity of a dietary antioxidant, what we get from the diet, remains about similar, more or less. But endogenous antioxidant capacity of our body decreases to make endogenous, like glutathione, alpha-lipoic acid, and coenzyme Q10, decreases as a function of age. And therefore, as we grow older, for example, younger people between the age of around 18 years old or older, say 30, they may not need an endogenous antioxidant. But when you are after 30, then you may need an endogenous antioxidant together with the dietary antioxidant. And so, for example, for a specific for women, prevent the osteoporosis, we recommend after 35, a woman should take a 1,000 to 12 milligram of calcium. But younger women may not need that calcium. And so one size fit all is not my recommendation, and you have to find out specific for age and gender. This is extremely important.
So, Dr. Prasad, so the website you recommend is it pmcinside.com?
That's correct.
pmcinside.com, people who want to know more. And, I mean, you are formulating nutritional supports, right, with this company, for this company. Are you doing the formulations because you want to make the right formulations available? Is that the purpose of the specific formulas that you're working with, or is
that's
there...
That's very correct, so that people know it, and the formulation is there, and people can look into it. And also that, you know, we are collaborating on this kind of formulation, testing this formulation with the Department of Defense Laboratory. We are doing how to protect damage against the exposure to mustard gas and the nerve agent. We are doing this with the Army, and more recently we have started a collaboration with our formulation with the Walter Reed Army Hospital on type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And so we are running a lot of clinical study and the basic science study because, you know, radiation protection and mustard gas and nerve agent you can't do on human. So we are doing on the animal model. So we are doing a lot of things as we go along with these products to testing the efficacy in the real situations and try to come up with a new formulation as we get more data. But currently, the formulation we have developed appears to be the best one.
Right. What do you have a formulation that protects against radiation? You're right on the West Coast. You're at great risk of getting all the radiation that's coming over from Japan right now.
Yeah, right. We have developed a formulation called BioShield. And the name of the formulation is BioShield. And we have developed two groups of people. One is the people who are going to get, say, diagnostic radiation like mammogram or
Dr. Prasad, I'm so sorry. You know, the music is playing. I can't believe we've come to the end of the show. But we're going to have to leave it. But I'd like everyone to visit PMCinside.com for
right.
Premier Micronutrients Corporation, PMCinside.com. Thank you so much for the great work that you're doing. I really enjoyed our show today.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Okay, bye now. And we've come to the end. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. We've been talking to Dr. Kedar Prasad, who's the author of Fighting Cancer with Vitamins and Antioxidants. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.